I don't think it is if you look at the broader public sector. What was given away yesterday by Philip Hammond was the bequeathment of decent borrowing figures, unexpectedly good borrowing figures, through to the NHS. But if you actually look at non-NHS services, then they are broadly going to be funded the same in real terms over the next 5 years. Now, if you compare that to pre-2008, most departmental budgets were going up about 3% in real terms. So for your listeners who are looking at local bus services, the schools budget, some of the non-health related spending, then it will not feel, as a result of yesterday's budget, like the pre-financial crisis spending period.
What did you feel about the improved financial forecasts?
Well, I think I would...
You believe them, basically, I think is what I'm saying.
Well, look, macroeconomic forecasts always, whoever makes them, they need to be taken with a pinch of salt. Split them out into the growth forecasts and the borrowing forecasts. Look, the borrowing forecasts, we're not going to hit a budget surplus at any point over the next 5 years. To some extent, that is the Chancellor responding to the political reality that the electorate appear to want additional public spending over and above what the current government spending, or the previous, the spending plans ahead of yesterday's budget. But I think the thing that is more interesting is the fact that the average rate of economic growth in the UK over the next 5 years is estimated to be 1.5% from the OBR. We got used to pre-crisis averages of 2 to 2.5%. So whichever way you cut it, whichever way you spin it, these are growth forecasts that suggest the UK economy is stuck in a low gear as regards growth for the next 5 years.
John Mills, I suspect you probably agree with that, don't you? And just Simon, we were talking to John earlier in the programme before you arrived, and his view is that this has done nothing to attack the fundamental problems of the economy. John, you still think that, presumably?
Yes, I really do. I mean, I think that, as I was saying earlier on, the problems of the UK economy are very low levels of investment, deindustrialisation, big balance of payments problems, big disparities in income between different regions of the country, intergenerational gaps, the rich getting richer while most people don't get increases in wages at all. And this do seem to be really very big fundamental problems, which I don't think the budget even begun to address. But sooner or later, I think these are going to have to be tackled because really to continue with growth of 1.5% with no wage increases for most people year after year after year, I just don't think is going to be a good political scene at all.
Simon, as you know, John Mills was the Vote Leave chairman of his former. On that day, I know when we talk, we keep harking back to it, after the vote and everything, you said that there would be a dearth of people who could actually carry out negotiations to help us through Brexit with new trade deals and the rest. Do you still feel that now?
Well, I still feel that we're under-resourced to do the negotiating process. And I think if you look at the record of the last 2 years, you've seen constantly the initiative has been taken by the EU27 rather than the UK. A great frustration of mine is that the UK hasn't come forward with its own legal text and has been allowed to play second fiddle. When you write the legal text in negotiations, you get first mover advantage. I really hope when the UK leaves the European Union on the 29th of March next year, we start getting in a position where we proactively put a Canada plus, if that is going to be the direction of travel, proposal very quickly in front of the EU Commission and get on the front foot regarding that. Unfortunately, I see most of Whitehall being distracted away from the very real challenges that John talks about, and I agree with every single one. It is distracted, it is all consumed by trying to manage the Brexit process, and that was the big shadow casted over yesterday's budget.
John, have you been disappointed with the Brexit process as we understand it? Obviously we don't know the inner workings, but the noise all the time is of confusion, isn't it? No real sense of direction.
Well, it is a bit. I mean, I think what clearly happened was that the government did have a fairly clear set of proposals which the Prime Minister set out in her Lancaster House speech, which were then derailed by the election which took place. And I think ever since then, the government has been struggling to try and find anything that is likely to be acceptable both to the EU27 and to the House of Commons. And I think it's a very difficult problem to square this off and to get something that the House of Commons will agree. I think I'd agree that the way negotiations have been conducted has been very unhelpful in many ways. I think the EU has taken the initiative. I think they've been very disciplined. They've been very well organised. To be honest with you, I think much of what they've suggested in their own terms is quite reasonable. And I think we're the ones who've shilly-shallied to and fro with different proposals which are very complicated and difficult for them to agree. But I think this has happened because there are conflicting views in the House of Commons which the Prime Minister is trying to accommodate, and it's very difficult to straddle them all.
Gentlemen, you both know Westminster very well. I've got two big questions for you. The first one is, Simon and John, I don't mind who answers the question, can Hammond survive?
So yes, he can. I think he's shown. I think yesterday was a decent budget. I mean, you always cautious because you have to go through the fine print to see whether there's any sort of hidden demons in there. Yeah. But I think given the situation he was faced, given the precarious political situation, given, you know, the DUP Tory backbenchers threatening to vote down the finance bill, which is a de facto vote of confidence in the government, I think he had to tread a very, very, you know, cautious line. He did it successfully, in my view, so I think he can survive. The problem is that we are now just 5 months away from Brexit, and a lot of what he has proposed is designed. We talk about the annual investment allowance, we talk about the bringing forward of the personal allowance increases. They're both designed to try and give the economy some momentum going into what is a very uncertain period in Q1 2019.
Okay, John, as we cast off into the stormy seas of being on your own once again as a mercantile driven nation, have we a strong finance minister in place, do you think?
Well, I think we've got a very cautious Chancellor of the Exchequer in place. Do I think there's going to be big changes in both the Prime Ministership and the Chancellorship over the next few months? I doubt it. I mean, I think that there's such a need at the moment for stability as far as possible in government that I would suspect that both of them will still be there for a while.
Do you feel, John, that these tax cuts are paving the way, if I can put it like that, for a 2019 general election, or is that taking things too far?
I don't think there's much of an urge to have a general election among the Conservative Party, or indeed the DUP, which of course is part of the government effectively. I should be a bit surprised if there is a general election in the near future. I think there may possibly be a change of leadership in the Conservative Party sometime in the next months or year, but I doubt if there's going to be a general election personally.
What's your political view, Simon?
Well, I think there are very few Conservative MPs that want to bring forward an election. And you've got to look at the Fixed Term Parliament Act. This is the legislation passed that means that we don't have a general election scheduled till May 2022. And in order to bring that forward, you have to have two-thirds of MPs voting to repeal the Fixed Term Parliament Act. It seems very unlikely to me that any of them, having seen the swing during the election campaign from Conservatives to Labour, at least in the opinion polls, that they're going to invite that in unless they absolutely have to.
And finally, Simon, just one for you. Do you buy this double deal dividend from Brexit? Will there be less pain in the future, do you think, for the UK?
There have been two people who've talked about the dividend. I think Philip Hammond's definition of a Brexit dividend is very true. He's held back some ammunition, fiscal headroom, which if we get a smooth transition, then yes, he will be able to spend that headroom. I think there's also another definition of the Brexit dividend, which has been cast around sometimes by Number 10, but mainly by Tory Brexiteers. I don't think that stacks up, unfortunately.